We can now dismiss our children and young people to classes and give our full attention to Brother Joel.
All right, now what we thought we would do for a series of classes is to review the prophecies of the restoration. We're going to try and bring together various prophecies from a number of different places from Scripture that speak about the hope of Israel, or more specifically, the account of the restoration of Israel as a nation back to their God. Now, we believe that it's critical that we should have a very personal interest in the hope of Israel, because we believe that we have also been invited into the house of Israel. Now, it's very important that we understand our place in the big picture. The hope of the truth has always been the hope of Israel. The new covenant belongs to the house of Israel. And the promises to the fathers belong to the nation of Israel. It's we who have been added to their olive tree. We are the wild branches. They are the natural branches. It's their olive tree, not ours. We hope that by the end of these three classes, you will go away with a greater appreciation of the Israelitish nature of the hope into which we have been called. We need to understand and never forget it is by God's good grace and His loving kindness that we have been added to a promise that really belongs to the nation of Israel and always has. The truth is thoroughly Israelitish with regard to the nature and extent of God's promises. It is very important that we have a sincere understanding and concern for the land and people of Israel. It means we need to have an appreciation of the Jews in the land today. It means that we need to appreciate that they are God's people and that they have a role to play. And that one day we will be joined together with them in a very personal and a very direct way. Now, just for clarification, what we will look at are not new ideas or anything you probably haven't heard before. It might be presented in a different way, but a majority of our thoughts actually come from Brother John Thomas's commentary. The mystery of the covenant of the Holy Land explained, contending for the faith, the last days of Judah's commonwealth, Eureka, exposition of Daniel. We should be very thankful that so many parts of the prophetic record have been brought together to help increase our understanding and reconfirm our hope. All of these are great resources, and we hope by the end of our classes, you'll want to pick up at least one of these books to expand upon the amount that we will be able to look at in the short amount of time that we have here this morning. Now, just one more difference between us and the churches of the world is that they do not understand the relationship of the nation to Israel, the nation of Israel, to the God of heaven. But we do. And that's key. Now, we hope that these studies will help us all to appreciate the Israelitish nature of the truth, and we hope to expand that this morning, or at least refresh our minds to lessons we have heard before on the hope of Israel. Well, this morning we are going to start our studies by reviewing the restoration of Israel. Now, as with every study, we need to lay the foundation. We need to start from the beginning to make sure we are all on the same page, which will help us move forward together. Now remember, there are two houses, the house of Israel and we have the house of Judah. So question, when was the nation of Israel divided into two? When was the nation of Israel divided into two? Well, the nation of Israel was divided into two after the reign of Solomon, because his son, who walked not in God's ways, was judged by God. As a result of that, he was left with two tribes, whereas the 10 tribes to the north formed another kingdom known as the House of Israel. The House of Israel was also known at times as Ephraim. The northern tribes, the 10 kingdoms, ended up with their capital in Samaria. And they were ruled over in the first instance by Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. The House of Judah was to the south. This was the line of David, and was always based in the city of Jerusalem. The house of Judah was composed of Benjamin, Levi, Judah, and some from the other 10 tribes as well that had migrated south. Either way, it was always known as the house of Judah. Now while both houses were in existence, they were known therefore as the house of Israel and the house of Judah. So another question. Which was the more spiritual houses of the two? Was it Israel or was it Judah? Well, it's always been Judah. Let's turn to Hosea 11. Hosea 11. For the respective spiritual positions of these two houses of Israel in the greatest sense. Hosea chapter 11 verse 12. Hosea 11 verse 12 reads, Ephraim compasseth me about with lies, and the house of Israel with deceit. But Judah yet ruleth with God, and is faithful with the saints. So the emphasis was on the truthfulness, the faithfulness of the house of Judah, as opposed to the lies and deceit that were to be found in the house of Israel. So the house of Judah was the more spiritual of the two. Faithful worship was continued from Jerusalem. And in fact, what happened was many of the faithful in the other tribes, those of the house of Israel, those who were faithful, many of them in fact migrated south into the land of the kingdom of Judah. We read throughout the scriptures of various examples. During the time of Asa, during the time of Jehoshaphat, during the time of Hezekiah, during the time of Josiah. We read of those people from the 10 tribes of the north who migrated south. And in fact, they not only went down to Judah to worship, but they ended up staying there. What happened was, the house of Judah ultimately was composed not just of the two tribes that had begun there, but of scatterings of the other 10 tribes as well. But it was always known as the house of Judah. Now we know that these two houses did not always live in peace and were ultimately taken into captivity. So question, which of the two houses were taken into captivity first, Israel or Judah? It was the house of Israel. Who captured the house of Israel? It was the Assyrians. The Assyrians came and took the 10 tribes away. They were scattered into captivity, and only the house of Judah was left. From then on, from the time that the 10 tribes went off into captivity, the house of Judah, as far as prophecy was concerned, always stood for those in the land, whereas the house of Israel stood for those that had been dispersed or scattered. Now that is a very important distinction to understand. The house of Judah always stood for those in the land, whereas the house of Israel represented those who had been dispersed. And we know, of course, that the second captivity took place under the Babylonians, and ultimately the house of Judah went into captivity as well. But they returned to the land later on. So question. So when we come to the time of Christ, who is in the land then? From a prophetical point of view, a scriptural point of view, who was in the land during the time of Christ? It was the house of Judah. As far as prophecy is concerned, it is the house of Judah that were in the land at the time of the Lord. But it probably included some from the other tribes as well. So as far as prophecy is concerned, the Jews have begun to return to the land of promise. So question, who is in the land today? The house of Judah or the house of Israel? It's the house of Judah. Israel has not yet returned to the land. The house of Israel is today in dispersion amongst all the countries of the world. So let's recap what we know so far. The house of Israel. 10 tribes. The capital is Samaria. Spiritual, were they really spiritual? No, not really. They were called deceitful. They were taken into captivity first by the Assyrians, and they were known as those that had been dispersed or scattered. And are they in the land today? No. What about the house of Judah? Judah consisted of 2 tribes. Their capital has always been Jerusalem. Are they spiritual? Yes, they were described as being spiritual. Truthfulness, faithfulness. They were taken into captivity second by the Babylonians. And they stood for those in the land. And are they in the land today? Yes. In a symbolic point of view. The house of Israel, as it was historically in Old Testament times, is much larger than the house of Judah. So question, how many Jews are in Israel today? Now, depending on which source or site you use, it looks like there are 6.6 million Jews in Israel. How many Jews are in the U.S.? There appear to be around 6 million Jews in the U.S. How many total Jews are there today in the world? How many Jews exist today? We believe there are right around 15 million. So we believe there are 6.6 million Jews in Israel, 6 million in the U.S., and 15 million throughout the world. So the house of Israel, from a numerical point of view, is a lot larger than the house of Judah. It is the house of Judah that is back in the land today. So we have been witnessing the time of the restoration, as it were, of the house of Judah. God has said, I will save the tents of Judah first. But where does that come from? That is from Zechariah 12. This is the first stage of restoration. Let's turn there. Zechariah chapter 12, verse 7. Zechariah chapter 12, verse 7. Zechariah 12, verse 7 reads, The Lord also shall save the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against Judah. However, the word saith in Isaiah 8, 14, He, Jesus, shall be a stone of stumbling and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel. Now, it is well known that this has not been fulfilled in relation to the ten tribes. There is then a partial and a primary restoration of the Jews before the manifestation, which is to serve as a basis of future operations in the restoration of the rest of the tribes after he has appeared in the kingdom. Now, Brother Thomas neatly distinguishes between the two houses of Israel. He says, it's the house of Judah that will be restored initially, and then the ten tribes that will be restored later on. So he carefully distinguishes between the restoration of the house of Judah and the house of Israel. But how do you think Brother Thomas worked that out? There is more to this than meets the eye. There are obviously a lot of Bible passages about the restoration of the Jews. But how many can you think of that specifically prophesy that the Jews will be restored to the land before the Lord Jesus Christ reappears? Let's read again in Zechariah. Zechariah 12, 7, and then verse 10. The Lord also shall save the tents of Judah first, but the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against Judah. Verse 10. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplications. And they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. I will save the tents of Judah first. The implication of Zechariah 12 is that if the Lord is coming to save the tents of Judah, that the tents of Judah must first be there to be saved. So therefore, Judah is in the land before the Lord returns. And when he comes, they look upon him whom they've pierced. We are talking about prophecies that don't merely prophesy the return of the Jews, but that specifically they will be returned before Christ comes. We read of it in Ezekiel 36, Ezekiel 37, Luke 21, and Jeremiah 30. Now, the point we are making is that there are some references, but there aren't many. There are a large number of prophecies concerning the restoration, but only a handful of prophecies that specifically deal with the return of the Jews prior to the appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. Brother Thomas was very careful to bring together his reasoning on those passages. and to differentiate between those Jews who have returned before Christ returns and those who have returned after. So here's a passage from Brother Thomas, The Last Days of Judah's Commonwealth. The restoration of Israel will not take place until after the appearing of Messiah in power. There will, however, be lifting up of an ensign upon the mountains of the Holy Land, Israel reduced to a feeble few. He goes on to show later on in the text, testimony and reason thereupon show that there must be a resettlement of the land by the Jews to a limited extent before the battle of Armageddon. For it is the prosperity of the Jewish colony that whets the appetite of the autocrat. The reason of the present calm is for the blossoming forth of Judah's plant. This bud, which is afterwards to become a swelling grape, may become manifest in Yahweh's vineyard. Do you see how carefully and precisely Brother Thomas wrote upon this subject? There must be a resettlement of the land by the Jews to a limited extent before the battle of Armageddon. It's the blossoming forth of Judah's plant, he said, not Israel's, Judah's plant. Here is the restoration of the house of Judah into the land of promise. It's a remarkable thing. What we are really saying is that you and I are living in the times when the restoration of the house of Judah is taking place. So question. The Jews that have returned to the land, what do you think has drawn them back? Why would they go back? Well, there are a few possible answers, but there seems to be a spirit for those that have returned to the land, that they are more drawn to the land. They feel a greater sense of affinity with the land of their fathers. They have no other option, or perhaps they want to go back there on their own. However, there are many other Jews in dispersion that are very comfortable with where they are, in the U.S., in Canada, in France, in Russia, wherever they might be. They might send money back to Israel on occasion, but they like the comforts of where they are a lot more. They haven't got that same spiritual pullback to the land of their fathers. So even today, there is some sense of difference between the house of Judah and the house of Israel. Now, we know that God had problems with both the house of Judah and the house of Israel. But God's problems with both houses were not the same. So question, what was Judah's problem in Bible times? What does God call Judah out for? What issue does he say they have? What was Judah's problem in Bible times? Let's turn to Jeremiah 13, verse 9, and read it. Jeremiah chapter 13, verse 9. What was Judah's problem in Bible times? Jeremiah 13, verse 9. Thus saith the Lord, after this manner will I mar the pride of Judah and the great pride of Jerusalem. So the problem of Judah was their pride and the great pride of Jerusalem, which was, of course, the capital of the house of Judah. However, that wasn't really Israel's problem. The problem with the house of Israel was idolatry. The problem with the house of Judah was their pride. And if you think about it, that is still the spirit of Judah today. The problem with the house of Judah, even today, is a spirit of pride that they manifest in Old Testament times. Now, we don't have time to chronicle or review the various wars that Israel has been involved with since the formation of the state of Israel. But we know there have been quite a few. The 1948 War of Independence. It's been said that the Jews were outnumbered on that occasion by 40-1. The 1956 Sinai-Suez Campaign. Israel's army attacked Egypt in the Sinai Peninsula. The 1967 Six-Day War. Egypt's casualties numbered more than 11,000, compared with only 700 for Israel. The 1973 Yom Kippur War. The coalition of Arab states led by Egypt and Syria against Israel. The 1983 Galilee War. Following an assassination attempt on an Israeli diplomat, Israel launched a military invasion of Lebanon they called Operation Peace in Galilee. Now, the point we are trying to make is that throughout recent history, Israel has had a war which they have remarkably and miraculously been victorious. They shouldn't have won all of those wars. They won many of those battles against odds that they shouldn't have defeated. And as a result of that, there is a spirit in the nation today that says, we can take care of ourselves. They believe that they have the destiny of Israel in their own hands. And here we have the house of Judah, back in the land of promise today. And they are manifesting the same spirit that they did in Old Testament times. And that spirit is their pride. The Jews today are very proud of their land, their military, and of their people. But it's not altogether surprising that they've manifested that spirit because they've had to. They've had to learn to develop a spirit of independence because they feel they haven't been able to trust in other nations for help or support. Now, Judah is restored to the land, but they still have exactly the same problem they've always had. They have the spirit of pride, whereby they do not really trust in Yahweh, the God of Israel. What we'd like to do now is review a summary of the humbling and the restoration of the house of Judah, those that are back in the land already. Now, we start by looking at the time when the land of Judah is invaded and the city of Jerusalem is captured. We only have time this morning to look at one of the references, so we have chosen Zechariah 14 for consideration. Now, here is the beginning where God now intends to take that proud, fiercely independent nation that is now in the land and humble them so that they might learn to trust in Yahweh, their God. So let's read Zechariah 14, verses 1 and 2. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the house rifled, and the women ravished. And half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. There's a tremendous amount of despair in those verses. You just see what God brings them to in that verse, verse 2. The Jews today are very proud of their nation, and they're very proud of Jerusalem, their capital. And the Jews declare Jerusalem to be their eternal and undivided capital of the state of Israel. They will never give up the city of Jerusalem. But God says, the day is coming, verse 2, when the city shall be taken. So question, how are the Jews in the land today going to feel when the city of Jerusalem falls? How are the Jews in the land today going to feel when the city of Jerusalem falls? Well, that is a mortal blow to the house of Judah. And everything that the house of Judah stands for, those that have gone back to the land today, will look as if it's turned to ashes in their hands. The nation is truly on the brink of being destroyed. And that is the moment that God brings them to. And he does it deliberately to break the spirit of the great pride which the nation has. So in the course of what happens, we are told that 2/3 of Judah will be cut off and destroyed. Zechariah 13:8. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. So that is 2/3. So question. Now, if there are 6.6 million Jews in the land today, what is 2/3 of that? Well, we are probably looking at over 4 million Jews dying. Now, have you ever stopped to ask, why is it 2/3 or 2 parts shall be cut off? Why not 7/8 or 3/4? Why 2/3? Well, we believe the answer is in Deuteronomy 21. 2 parts shall be cut off, and I will bring the third part through the fire. So let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 21, and we'll read verses 16 and 17. Deuteronomy 21, verses 16 and 17. Then it shall be, when he maketh his sons to inherit that which he hath, that he may not make the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, which is indeed the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the son of the hated for the firstborn, by giving him a double portion of all that he hath, for he is the beginning of his strength, the right of the firstborn is his. Now we know that the double portion was a right that belonged to the firstborn. And you see that phrase, double portion, in Deuteronomy 27:17. That is the same phrase translated two parts in Zechariah 13. So it's not just that two parts are cut off, it's a double portion that is cut off. The same phrase occurs in 2 Kings 2. Let's turn there. 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 9. 2 Kings 2, verse 9. And it came to pass, when they were gone over, that Elijah said unto Elisha, ask what I shall do for thee, before I be taken away from thee. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. A double portion, or two parts. Now come back to Genesis chapter 49. Genesis chapter 49. So the house of Judah has the double portion cut off, that they might die. Let's read Genesis 49, verse 3. Genesis 49, verse 3. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. The word excellency means, literally, the preeminence or authority. So Reuben was the preeminence or head, the preeminence of dignity, and the preeminence of power. Now, it's been suggested, and we believe with good reason, that these two phrases relate to two different aspects of the right of the firstborn. Number one, the preeminence of dignity was the right of priesthood. And number two, the preeminence of power was the right of rulership. And both of those rights, the right of priesthood and the right of kingship, belong, of course, to the firstborn son. But we are told in the fourth verse concerning Reuben, Genesis 49:4. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it, he went up to my couch. So the right of priesthood and the right of kingship and the right of the double portion that originally belonged to Reuben was lost from him to other tribes. Question: who received the double portion of the inheritance? It was the house of Joseph. Ephraim and Manasseh each took a tribal portion. So Joseph received the double portion right of the firstborn. Well, who received the right of priesthood from Reuben? It was the house of Levi. And who took the right of kingship from Reuben? It was the house of Judah. Let's turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. 1 Chronicles chapter 5, and we'll read verses 1 and 2. 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but forasmuch as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the sons of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. Verse 2, for Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph's. So the right of kingship was transferred to the house of Judah, who prevailed above the other brethren and took that right. So let's come back to Zechariah 13. So with the house of Judah back in the land, Zechariah 13:8. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. So when the Lord Jesus Christ was here, which tribe was in the land? It was the house of Judah. So Christ was of the tribe of Judah. He was the chief ruler. He was the prince. Well, question. What did the house of Judah do to Christ? Well, they rejected him. And because they rejected Christ, they will receive a double punishment for their sin. And two parts shall be cut off and die. Isn't that Isaiah 40? Let's turn there. Isaiah 40, chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 and 2. Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 and 2. Comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem, and cry unto her, that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received the Lord's hand double for all her sins. And the house of Judah was particularly responsible for the rejection of he who was of their own tribe, and he is coming again. So the humbling of the house of Judah is building up to that moment when the house of Judah is confronted with the man they rejected. But in the meantime, the double portion will be cut off and die. And not only that, but we believe that many of the house of Judah are actually going to be removed or deported as well. In fact, it says in Zechariah 14:2, I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. And half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Not only is the nation going to be overrun, not only is the city of Jerusalem going to be taken, not only are two-thirds of the nation going to be destroyed, but some are going to be deported into captivity itself from the land of their fathers. Can you imagine how a Jew in the land of Judah today will feel to be actually deported out of his own land? Let's go to Joel, the book of Joel, chapter 3. Joel chapter 3, verse 1. Joel chapter 3, verse 1 reads, For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem. So Joel chapter 3 in its final application has relationship to the time when the house of Judah is restored into the land of promise. Joel 3, verse 4. Yea, and what have ye to do with me, O Tyre, and Zidon, and all the coasts of Palestine? Will ye render me a recompense? And if ye recompense me, swiftly and speedily will I return to your recompense upon your own head. So question, why are Tyre and Zidon mentioned here in verse 4? Why those places? Why are they mentioned here in verse 4? Because from those two centers, slave trading occurred in biblical times. And from the land of Israel in the age to come, slave trading will carry on again. Joel 3, verses 5 and 6. Because ye have taken my silver and my gold, and have carried into your temples my goodly, pleasant things, the children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, that ye might remove them far from their border. So at the time when the house of Judah is brought back into the land, there will be a final distressing that some of the nation will actually be sent out to the land, deported into captivity. Can you just imagine how members of the house of Judah will feel in that context, on that basis, with the spirit of their pride? All of their technology, all of their powerful weapons, all hope is gone. It's as if the entire nation has come to an end. The Jews in the land at this time, the house of Judah, are brought to the point where they believe all hope is gone. But we know that is the right time for the remnant of Judah to be saved by their Messiah. Let's turn to Micah. Micah chapter 5. Micah chapter 5, and we'll read verses 2 and then verses 4 and 5. Micah chapter 5, verse 2. But thou Bethlehem, Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be the ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from of old, from everlasting. Verse 4. And he shall stand and feed in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall abide for now, shall he be great unto the ends of the earth. And this man shall be the peace when the Assyrian shall come into our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces, then shall we raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men. And so the Lord Jesus Christ, he that is to be the ruler of Judah, born in Bethlehem, arrives at the critical moment when the latter-day Assyrian comes walking into the land of the house of Judah. We believe that the advent of the Lord to the house of Judah will be perfectly timed. Christ will appear at the very moment when the house of Judah believes that all hope is gone. And God has brought them specifically and deliberately to that point. Now, we often talk about the Battle of Armageddon and how it is God's judgment upon the nations. But it's more than that, isn't it? The Battle of Armageddon is God's instrument to humble the house of Judah and to bring them to that point where they are finally in despair and with tears in their eyes acknowledge their God. Christ is the one who's going to appear at the perfect moment to deliver the house of Judah. And so we believe as a result of that, that many other events will happen. The remnant of Judah being saved by their Messiah, that the house of Israel will rally against their enemies, and they will be strengthened and encouraged by the Lord Jesus Christ to fight for the defense and ultimate salvation of the land of their people. And we would now like to move on to the cleansing and restoration of the house of Judah. So the nation having been humbled, they are then prepared for the work of restoration that will follow. So Judah must first be humbled in order that Judah can then be restored. And the land of Judah will be cleansed and purged, and the house of Judah will then be confronted by the one who has delivered them. Let's look at Zechariah chapter 13, verse 6. Zechariah 13, verse 6. And one shall say unto him, what are these wounds in thine hands? Then he shall answer, those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. So a man appears with wounds in his hands, and you see the sense of surprise. Christ returns to deliver the nation, and one person who they would never imagine him to be is Jesus Christ. They think their Messiah has now come, but they don't believe that Jesus of Nazareth is their Messiah. They believe that this is the real one that has now come to deliver them. And one says, what are these wounds in thine hands? It's a genuine question. And he replies, those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. And there is this dreadful moment when the house of Judah is now asked to face the man with the wounded hands that they rejected. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 45 to try and put it all into context. Genesis chapter 45. Now in Genesis 45, remember the time when Joseph was with his brethren, and the time had come to now reveal who he was. So let's read Genesis chapter 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him. And he cried, cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. Now those brethren would have been absolutely dumbfounded, shocked, and scared. Verse 2, and he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. The margin says they were terrified. And here was this man whom they thought to be the ruler of the Egyptians with tears running down his face, who suddenly breaks into the Hebrew tongue and says, I am Joseph. Verse 4, and Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom he sold into Egypt. Doesn't that sound very similar to, I am Jesus whom thou persecuted? Isn't that the same cry? I am Jesus whom thou persecuted. I am Joseph whom ye sold. These are the wounds with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. You see what Joseph says in verse 7. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Wasn't that what Christ will say? So question, of Joseph's brothers, do you know who was the spokesman for the brethren on this occasion? Who was the spokesman of Joseph's brothers? It was Judah. Genesis 44, verse 14. Genesis 44, verse 14. And Judah and his brethren came to Joseph's house, for he was yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. Verse 16, and Judah said. Verse 18, then Judah came near unto him. And although all the brethren were there, Judah was the spokesman. The confrontation took place between Joseph and all his brethren that were represented by Judah. So there was the prototype of Zechariah chapter 12 and 13, when the day of the Lord confronts the house of Judah. Do you know how awful the house of Judah will feel? Well, we think they will most likely say what Judah said here in Genesis 44, 16. Isn't this the spirit of the nation? Genesis 44, verse 16. And Judah said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also with whom the cup is found. Isn't that how present day Judah will feel? All born out of the circumstances of that day when Joseph was revealed unto his brethren. And that is what it will be like with the house of Judah. That proud, independent nation that we see in the land today, Christ will bring them to that point. Now, Zechariah 12 says as a result of that, this is what it will be like. It is a marvelous thing to contemplate. Zechariah 12, verse 4. In that day, saith the Lord, I will smite every horse with astonishment and his rider with madness, and I will open mine eyes upon the house of Judah, and will smite every horse of the people with blindness. There are a couple of things about verse 4 that we need to take note of. First of all, the lovely contrast between what happens here. God opens his eyes to the house of Judah, but smites their enemies with blindness. Did you notice the contrast? And here's another thing to think about. How long has the house of Judah been back in the land of promise? For some it could be 10 years, for others 50, 60, 70. Some of the families in the land today trace their roots back to the 1800s, don't they? But what verse 4 is telling us is this. That although the nation has been back in the land, God has not yet opened eyes upon them. That hasn't happened yet. That has not yet occurred. But God is waiting to do it. Zechariah 12, verse 10 and 11. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplications. And they shall look upon me, whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him, as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him, as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. In that day shall there be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as the mourning of Hadadrimmon in the valley of Megiddon. What a dreadful time that will be, but also what a remarkable cleansing time. As tears pour down the face of every person in the house of Judah as they acknowledge Jesus of Nazareth. Well, question, what was the mourning of Hadrimmon in the valley of Megiddon? It was the death of Josiah. Let's actually take a look at that because the context is marvelously true. 2 Chronicles chapter 35. 2 Chronicles chapter 35. 2 Chronicles chapter 35, and we'll read verses 22, 23, and 24. Nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself that he might fight with him, and hearken not unto the words of Necho from the mouth of God, and came to fight in the valley of Megiddo. And the archers shot at King Josiah, and the king said to his servants, have me away, for I am sore wounded. His servants therefore took him out of that chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had, and they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died, and was buried in one of the sepulchres of his fathers, and all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah. That is the mourning that is mentioned in Zechariah chapter 12. It is the house of Judah all over again. And you know why it's appropriate that the mourning is similar to the mourning that was experienced in the day of King Josiah? Because King Josiah was a good king who met his death by piercing. And isn't that the man that they mourn in Zechariah 12, the man with the wounded hands? Unfortunately, we don't have time to look at the national lamentations that follows. The bringing of the house of Judah into the new covenant and the dispersal of Judah being restored with the house of Israel at the time of the end. However, what we have had time to review and highlight this morning is extremely important. The house of Judah being brought back into covenant relationship with their God. That is the nation that we see today. That is the house of Judah. These events are going to happen to the people in the land today. We look at the nation of Israel during the time of the Exodus and say, how could anyone who saw the waters of the Red Sea parting ever doubt, murmur, or ever lack faith? They saw such wonderful miracles. But we in present day are witness to the restoration of the house of Judah. We have seen the beginning of the restoration prophecies. And it's about to get even more interesting with the unfolding of Israel, both houses, being restored to their God. In fact, some of us will even be privileged to deal with the house of Judah in that day. Some of us may be there when they mourn for the Lord. Some of us may be involved in restoring Judah into the bonds of the covenant. And some of us may be there to see that they learn to trust in their God. However, we too struggle with the same challenges facing the house of Judah today. We will only be there if we learn to overcome the problem that they are struggling with as well, the problem of pride. We can't be expected to help the Lord to overcome that spirit in his people if we have not come to grips with that in our own lives as well. Here's a quote from Brother Thomas from Elpis, Israel. The Lord Jesus Christ that is appearing in his kingdom finds Judah inhabiting the land. Not all the Jews, but a goodly number of them. 2/3 of the people will have been cut off by the war against Gog. And a third which survive will have passed through a fiery ordeal. It will have been a refining process in which they will have been refined like silver and tried as gold is tried. Thus prepared a spirit of grace and supplications will be poured upon them, and they will call on the name of the Lord, and he will hear them and open for them a fountain for sin and uncleanness. He will say, and it is my people, and they shall say, Yahweh, even Jesus, is my God. Thus will Judah be grafted again into their own olive and brought to acknowledge Jesus as King of the Jews and to confess that he is Lord to the glory of God the Father. So we will see the new covenant being made with the house of Judah. The kingdom will be reestablished, not, however, to its fullest extent just yet. It is a remarkable account, this account of the restoration of all the house of Israel to their God. And it begins with what we have looked at with this first class, when Yahweh will open his eyes upon the house of Judah. Yahweh will open his eyes upon the house of Judah. We'll close there and we'll pick up again next period.